Well, I recognize that I'm probably the only person in this room that fell asleep last night worried about today's message. You guys probably had other things on your mind and other things that you were worried about. We recognize that when we so appreciate that you keep coming back Sunday after Sunday, regardless of what we do up here on the platform. And if you are here today because a friend promised you that Andy Stanley is this incredible communicator and he's going to connect with your life in a way that you've just never experienced before, they should buy you a really great lunch today. Because I am not Andy Stanley. But he will be back next week for a new series that we're kicking off. But today, I wanted to take some time and talk to you about something that I feel really makes Access Church unique, that's a huge part of who we are. And it's a way that we approach our kids. And if you fell asleep worrying about anything last night, it was probably your kids. Our kids are, they own a piece of our heart. And I know from talking to parents at all different stages of life that that doesn't change as you get older, and that doesn't change as your kids get older. That even when your kids are grown and supposedly responsible adults, that you still fall asleep worrying about your kids. And so today we're going to talk about this idea of just, you know, family and the responsibility that God's given us to raise kids that understand who God is and his great love for them, and some of the challenges that are out there in front of us too, and how we can tackle those. So first I thought I'd introduce you to my family. This is my wife and kids, my wife Stephanie, lovely woman there in the blue dress. And on the far left, we have our oldest, Peyton. He's 15. Next to him is Chase. He's 12. And then Carly, who's 14. And finally, Cutler, who's 9 years old. And they are the absolute joys of our life. We love having kids. We love being parents. We love spending time together as a family. And in fact, when we were dating, Stephanie asked how many kids I wanted to have, and I said 10. Because I love kids, and I just thought it would be so fun to have, like, you know, a full 5-on-5 basketball game just with our kids. And then somewhere around, like, after we had 2 kids that were 15 months apart, 10 started to sound like a really big number. So we decided to take a break after 4 and kind of see how it went for a little while. But we love our kids, we love our family, and I'm sure that you do as well. And yet, you know, parenting can be a bit of a challenge, and it's a little bit overwhelming. In fact, I can think back to when our oldest, Peyton, was born, and it was time for us to leave the hospital, and they brought Stephanie out to the curb, you know, in the wheelchair, and she's got the baby in her lap, and we got all settled in the car and get him strapped into his carrier for the first time and everything. And then she gets in the back seat with Peyton, and we pull out of the parking lot of the hospital, and it's about a 15-minute drive home, and she just begins bawling. And ladies, if you don't already know this, when you start to cry, it sets off an alarm bell inside our male brain. And the alarm bell just sounds like this. It goes, fix it, fix it, fix it, fix it, fix it, fix it, over and over. We completely rattled by that. And I didn't even know why she was crying. That was the thing. I mean, it's like as soon as we pulled out, she just started crying, and I had no idea why. And so I began to ask some questions, and I discovered that she just felt this overwhelming sense of responsibility. You know, and she said, what were they thinking? They just let us leave with this baby. I've got this baby, you know, no idea what to do next, and they just let us leave. In fact, they asked us 2 questions before we left the hospital. Number 1, are you his parents? Number 2, do you have a car seat? As long as we said yes to those 2 questions, we were free to go. And we felt completely unqualified. In fact, we just were so unprepared. And if Stephanie had known, I mean, if she had really, truly known just how unqualified and ill-prepared we were, if she had known the mistakes that we would make in the years to come, she probably would have cried a lot harder for a lot longer. In fact, I can remember a few years later, we were at my sister's house in the rolling hills of Tennessee, and it was my niece's rehearsal dinner, And Stephanie, the other kids were in the wedding, the older kids, we had four by this time. And so the three older ones were in the wedding, and so Stephanie was kind of with them, making sure they had the right, you know, stuff and all that. And all I had was Cutler. He was a baby at the time. I had him in a stroller, and all I had to do was keep this one kid safe. That was the total extent of my job description. So I'm pushing him around, and we're looking at some of the decorations and all that. My family done a great job getting ready for this wedding. And then there was a conversation with some of my cousins taking place, and I kind of want to be a part of that. So I parked the stroller and engaged in this conversation with my cousins. And I don't remember what I heard first. If it was someone calling my name, or if it was just the collective scream of every woman at that event. But when I turned around, I realized that we don't have hills in Florida. And I parked the stroller right at the top of a hill. And since we don't have hills in Florida, I'd never really made it a practice to use those little brakes on the stroller. So by the time I turn around, the stroller is, with baby in it, about 70 miles an hour, I'd guess, straight downhill. Have you ever tried to run down a hill fast? It's hard. Have you ever tried to do it in dress shoes on grass? So it just was sort of this collective, everybody jumped up and sprang into action. He's headed straight for the trees, and everyone's screaming. And thankfully, one of the guests got to him first and saved, which I was a little mad because I at least want to redeem myself by having saved my son that I had placed in danger. But someone else saved his life, and he was okay. I tell you that story because it's a funny one, and because I don't have the courage to tell you the real times that I've messed up in my kids' lives. I mean, if I told you the times that that I've really messed up as a parent, if I told you about the times that I've been completely insensitive as a dad and made my kids cry, it would embarrass my kids, and it would just make you mad at me. Some of you be mad at me for a long time. So I won't tell those stories, but I will say that it's challenging to be a parent. And I've messed up a bunch. And my hunch is that if you've been a parent for more than 2 days, you've probably messed up as well. And you've found out that it's an awfully challenging exercise as well. And the reality is, I'm broken. I grew up in a home where my parents didn't always get the parenting thing right. And that has an effect on me to this day. And I grew up in a home where my parents didn't always get the marriage thing right. And that has an effect on me to this day. And so I didn't see it modeled really well. And the fact that it wasn't modeled really well affects me and the way that I relate to people today. If you've heard Andy's story, if you've read the book, Deep and Wide, fantastic book. I highly encourage you to read it. But if you've read the book, you know that Andy grew up in a home that was dysfunctional. And you know that his parents grew up in homes that were dysfunctional. And these things factor into our marriages today, and they factor into our parenting today, and they make it difficult. And here's something I know about you. I know that your parents didn't always get it right. And I know that that has an effect on you. And if I'm broken and Andy's broken, I got a pretty good bet that we're all broken. And that we're all trying to figure out how to do this parenting thing, and yet we're handicapped. In fact, I would bet that that if I actually knew some of the things that went through your mind at different times, I'd be shocked. If I knew what you thought about that person in front of you in traffic, I might think you were not qualified to be a parent. If I knew what you actually think about your boss sometimes, or your spouse sometimes, or your neighbor sometimes, or your kids sometimes, I might actually come to the conclusion that you're not qualified to be a parent. I mean, we are broken people. We're messed up. And yet we're given this incredible opportunity and this incredible challenge and responsibility to take a little tiny baby and somehow raise them up to be a functioning adult who's supposed to not only contribute to society, but if we're people who follow after God, we believe they should be people that change the world. And so how do we do that? How do we do that in the midst of the fact that we're kind of broken and we're kind of messed up ourselves?
You see, before Stephanie and I had our first kid, we were required to go through an 8-week class, an 8-week birthing class. It was all about stuff that guys have no interest in knowing. It was all about, you know, everything from prenatal vitamins to, you know, whether or not you should do the epidural or not do the epidural, and when you should do the epidural and how you should do the epidural. You came out of the birthing class knowing all kinds of stuff about the birthing process. They even prepared you for, you know, if things go wrong and you end up in an emergency C-section and all this. The class is great. A lot of helpful stuff. But the class ends with, and then you have a baby. Goodbye. That's it. Nobody teaches a parenting class, or very few places teach parenting classes, and a lot of us have probably never been. I was not required to go through a parenting class to get my bachelor's degree. I was not required to go through a parenting class to get my master's degree. Who's teaching us how to be parents? And so we have this huge responsibility and this huge opportunity, and yet we're often ill-equipped. Here's something else I know about you, besides the fact that you're broken. I know that you want to be a great parent. I know that you want to equip your kids to be world changers. I know that you want to equip your kids to make the right decisions at the right times every time. I know that you have this desire to see your kid grow up with confidence and strength and humility and charity. You have all these dreams for your kids. And you're working really hard, somehow between carpool and soccer games and, you know, everything else that's a pull on your life. You are working really hard to try and instill these values in your kids, but it's tough. I know that if you have a daughter, that your desire is that she grows up to be strong and confident, and that she knows that her beauty comes from the inside, and that it's so much more valuable than what anybody says about her outside, and it's something that no one can ever take away from her, and you want her to have the strength and the confidence to say no to all the boys that only want her for what she can offer them physically. And I know that if you have a boy, that you desire that he would grow up to be strong and confident and secure because of how God has made him and designed him and the great things that God has for him, and that he would have the courage and the strength to say no to the other guys that are trying to get him to drink or to smoke or to take steroids or whatever else is going on in his life and whatever temptation is coming his way. I know you want to be great parents. And Stephanie and I, we were kind of caught in this tension. But we got 4 kids, and we want to be great parents. We want great things for our kids. And yet, we felt ill-equipped, honestly, based on our own background and our experience. You know, we've never been parents before. And this is why the first time we visited North Point in 2003, it was such a big deal for us to discover the strategy that North Point was employing and the strategy that we have replicated here at Access Church for helping parents to be better parents, for not just doing church, but for really encompassing an integrated strategy where the home and the church can work together. You see, the home and the church are the two most powerful institutions that God's ever created. God created one thousands of years before the other. Both of them have been around for thousands of years longer than you and I, but they're designed in some ways for different purposes, but really they're designed for this one unified purpose together. That both the home and the family ultimately exist for one purpose, and that is to lead people, big and small, into a growing relationship with Jesus Christ. The home, you know, is this this place where we want our kids to understand unconditional love, and the church is where we want them to understand that God's the light of the world, and he offers redemption and reconciliation for everyone. And so we're going to use some colors today to help us remember this. We're going to color code things a little bit. We'll start with red. Red is the color of the family. Because our heart, we use red a lot of times to demonstrate love in our hearts and warmth and all of that. And so we talk about the warmth of the home, the love of the home, and we use the color red to illustrate just how important the home is. And if there's one thing that matters more than anything else in the home, it's that we want our kids to understand unconditional love, right? We want them to know that the bond in the home can never be severed, that there is nothing that our kids can ever do that will drive them away from our love. Oh, we might demonstrate that love in some tough ways sometimes. We might have to exercise discipline, and we might have to offer correction, but there is nothing that they can ever do that will drive them away from a parent's love. That's what red represents in the home. In our home, we have a wooden plaque, and it's hung in the kitchen of every home that we've ever lived in. It's very simple. It simply says, always, forever, and no matter what. And it starts with my commitment to Stephanie and her commitment to me. It's always, it's forever, and it's no matter what. And we want our kids to see that kind of unconditional love demonstrated in our relationship with each other. We believe there's a lot of security that that offers our kids. But we also want them to know that our relationship with them is always, forever, and no matter what. That's the purpose of the home. That's what red represents. It represents permanence. It represents that our kids know that no matter how difficult things might be between us, that we're going to keep coming back to each other. We're going to keep working at reconciliation. We're going to keep working at redemption, because that's what God does for us, and that our relationships in the home, they're worth fighting for. That's red. Yellow represents the church. Because the church is called to be the light of the world. We're the lighthouse for the world. We are to be the city set on a hill. We're supposed to be a light that illuminates in a dark place. And when people have questions about who God is, the church can provide those answers. And so the church is this source of hope and light for our families. So we use yellow. And we're actually using this right here to represent the church. And these balls, they each represent 1 hour in a year that we get with your kids. And so in a given year, we get about 40 hours with your kids. Now, maybe you say, well, we come to church every Sunday, and I'm sure you mean it, and I'm sure you think you do. But vacations and business travel and sickness and all that, we're really all boils down to it. We're left with about 40 hours with our kids here at church. And we have this challenge in those 40 hours to teach them everything we know about faith, about forgiveness, and about God's redemption. And the challenge that you and I have is that in our culture, we outsource everything. You know, if we've got a problem with our car, we take it to the mechanic. If we have a problem with our air conditioning, we call the air conditioning guy. And we do that with our kids as well. When we send our kids to school, we expect someone there to educate them and to teach them about social norms and values and behavior. And when we send our kids to soccer practice, we want them to learn about soccer, but we also want their coach to teach them about teamwork and discipline and other good things like that. When we send them to piano lessons, we want them to learn the piano, but we also want them to learn an appreciation for the arts. And so likewise, when we send them to church, there's this danger that we drop them off for these 40 hours a year, and we say, hey, in that time, it's the church's responsibility to teach the kids morals, to teach them virtues, to teach them about godly living, to teach them about the Bible and all of that. And the challenge is, we only have 40 hours in a year that we can really do that. So we have some really great stuff to teach, but we've got to be really choosy about how we use those 40 hours. And we've got to make sure that we're great stewards of those 40 hours, because it's not a lot. We're very, very limited. In fact, if you were to compare it to the family has a little more time, and we thought, how could we, how many hours does a family have really when the kids aren't sleeping and when the kids aren't at school? How many hours in a year do parents have to influence their kids? And we came up with the number, oh, there's some really good tape on there. Oh! $3,000. I was worried that wasn't going to come open. And I was going to have to just really describe 3,000 red ping pong balls. 3,000 hours. And you look at this and you think, wow, what an opportunity. This is incredible. I have 3,000 hours with my kids. I have 3,000 hours that I get to teach them about God and His faithfulness. I have 3,000 hours that I get to teach my kids morals and virtues. I have 3,000, I have 3,000 hours with my kids. I know how some parents feel at the end of summer. You see them on Facebook going, 4 more days till school starts, 3 more days till school starts, 2 more days till school starts. Because 3,000 hours, while it's an incredible opportunity, it's a tremendous challenge as well. And it's a tremendous responsibility. And when we stop and we think about the responsibility of 3,000 hours per year with our kids, that they're not in school, that they're not sleeping, it's enough to make us start crying, just like Stephanie cried all the way home from the hospital. Because it's this huge challenge that we have. And you know, if you're like me, you're not quite sure where to start. What to do with these 3,000 hours? I had a great dad. He was a great guy, and he believed in me, and he loved me. He was awesome. But he was not a God follower, and he never went to church with us. And so I never saw godly parenting modeled from a dad's perspective. I never saw what that looked like. And so even though I went to college, and I went to seminary, and I got the head knowledge, when I came out of all that and I had kids of my own, I felt a tremendous amount of guilt, maybe the way that you feel oftentimes with your kids. Like, I know I should be teaching them these things, I just don't know how. I don't know where to start. I mean, I know that it's a really big deal that they learn these things, and I know that I'm probably the person that they should be learning them from, but I don't know where to start. And so I'm just gonna kind of turn and look at the church and go, I hope you guys are really good at this. Because I don't know how to do it. I know I got 3,000 of these and you've only got 40, but you're just gonna have to be really, really good with your 40. And this is why when Stephanie and I visited North Point for the first time and we saw this strategy of orange, we got so excited. Because I was feeling guilt at the time. I wanted to teach this stuff to my kids, but I needed someone to give me the tools. I needed someone to tell me how. I needed someone to make it really simple for me. And so we have this strategy that we've replicated here that our volunteers employ every single week that we call orange. Because we believe when you take the yellow of the church and the red of the family and you bring these two influences together, that the combined influence is so much more powerful than one influence standing on its own. It's kind of like when you have a dad who's really passionate about creating great experiences for his kids, and he begins to build things in his backyard because he just loves to build and create stuff, and these things that he builds and creates get bigger and bigger, and he's building like trains in his backyard that his kids can ride on and all this, and he decides how cool would it be if families could do fun stuff like this together, and he creates something called Walt Disney World. You take the force of a dad who loves to create stuff and the idea of families having fun together, and you put those two together, and it's something so much more powerful than just a dad building stuff in his backyard. It's why when you take, Dave Ramsey says that you can take Belgian plow horses. One Belgian plow horse on its own can pull 8,000 pounds. But you know if you put two Belgian plow horses together and yoke them together, that they pull not 16,000 pounds, but 24,000 pounds. I don't know how that works. I don't understand that. I don't understand how you could take two separate forces that on their own can each pull 8,000 pounds, and you put them together, and they pull not twice the amount, but three times the amount. And some even say that if those plow horses are trained together, and they get used to each other, and they get used to working together, that they can pull as much as four times as much weight as they could pull individually. See, this is this incredible principle that we can take two influences that are very powerful on their own, but if we can figure out how to work them together, In fact, as we as a staff, as we look at all of this and we say, man, there's a lot of ping pong balls out here, but we're not in this. This is mom and dad's world. We only have this right here. And so we say, we've got to be really strategic and really intentional. We've got to figure out a way to leverage these 40 hours in a way that makes these 3,000 hours that much more powerful. And I stand before you as someone who wears both hats. I wear the red hat and the yellow hat. And when I wear the red hat, I look at all of this opportunity and I get kind of excited. But then I also get really intimidated and I'm not sure where to start. I put on the yellow hat and I think, man, we got some really great stuff that we want to teach, but then I get discouraged because there's just not a lot of time, not a lot of opportunity. And so we think we've discovered some ways that our team here and the team at North Point have worked together to create environments to really leverage our influence together. And we do that in a lot of ways. We do that by keeping things simple and trying to teach our kids something that they can take home and talk about. And we've boiled this down, actually, to five things that we believe that every kid needs. And we're going to talk about those five things here real quick, and then we'll be done for today. But the first thing that every kid needs is they need to know that there's a really big God that they can trust no matter what. This is the core essential that we want them to know. We want them to develop a relationship with their Heavenly Father, and we want to know that He's big enough for anything, anything that comes their way. And so we start in Wambaland, and for 4 or 5 years while they're in Wambaland, we teach the same three truths over and over again. We teach, God loves me, God made me, and Jesus wants to be my friend forever. And we just keep telling them that over and over again because our volunteers understand that they're not just providing childcare in there. They are making the first impression on a kid's life, an impression that they're going to refer back to 20 years later or 30 years later. When somebody says Heavenly Father, they're going to have an emotional response to those words. And in many ways, it'll be dependent on their very first impressions of what someone tried to communicate about their Heavenly Father. And so we want to teach them about this big, big God. But you can help us. And this is where the yellow and the red come together. When we leverage what's taught here and we take it home and we make it portable. And we try to make things really, really simple so that they can be portable. You do not have the responsibility to go home and teach your kid the whole Bible. You will have a difficult time reading the book of Hezekiah to your 4-year-old. You don't have to be overwhelmed with the choice. You just simply have to say, okay, I can get this. I can repeat this. God made me. God loves me. Jesus wants to be my friend forever. That's our goal. We feel like if by the time a kid is 4 years old, they get that, they know that, they believe that, and we've been able to reinforce that through all kinds of illustrations from the Bible, as well as in our lives, that we've done something really, really powerful. And so we want to send them home, and you can help us by paying attention to the resources that we send home with the kids. You can take these 40 and multiply them across these 3,000 by paying attention to the God time cards and the other resources, the parent cards that we send home with the kids, and leverage that in your home and talk about this in your home as well. The second thing we believe that every kid needs is we believe that every kid needs someone else who believes what they believe. They need to know that there's someone else on the journey with them. They need to know that there's someone else walking alongside them. You and I need to know this as adults. And we believe that if we can teach the kids this early on, that it'll be that much easier for them when they get to adulthood. Look, if you've got kids that are elementary age, you're already praying that God will bring them good friends. And we're here saying, we've got some great friends for them, and they're right here at church. They're in a small group. This is why we put every one of our kids in small groups, starting in Wambaland. And we do this because we believe everybody ought to be in a community group, a small group. And we sit up here at least once a year and we tell you how important it is that you're in a community group. And we're willing to pretty much do anything to get you in a community group. We will bribe you to get into a community group because I believe it's that important for your life. But we backed up and decided, you know what? If we can start teaching these kids when they're 2 and 3 and 4 years old that being in a small group is normal, we won't have to work so hard by the time they're adults. But here's how you can help us. You can help us by, first of all, modeling it for your kids. Be in a community group yourself. Surround yourself with other people that are asking the same questions that you're asking, which is essentially this. How do I take this whole faith thing and apply it in the real life circumstances of my job, of my family, of my neighbors, of my volunteer opportunities? What does it look like for me to live out this faith that we talk about on Sunday? See, this is why we don't do a lot of stuff during the week. We're not trying to fill up your calendar. We want to leave your calendar open so that you can be in a community group, so you can spend time with your kids, so first of all, model this. Model this for your kids. And secondly, as it relates to your kids, if you could bring them the same hour every week, and if you can bring them as many weeks as you can possibly bring them, that will allow us to develop great relationships in those small groups from Wombaland all the way up through Inside Out for our high school students. We want those to be consistent relationships. Here's something we've learned about relationships through community groups. We don't very often walk away from a group experience and say, wow, that one experience changed my life. What we have learned is that consistent deposits over time will change our lives. It's not the one-time thing that rocks our world. It's when we continue to invest in relationships over time that we find we have invaluable relationships. You know this. You found yourself like me introducing one of your friends to someone else, and you say, wow, I guess we've been friends for like 10 years, or we've been friends for 15 years. Then you get really old, and you're like, we've been friends for 20 years. You remember your parents saying things like that? You know, and you think, I never thought I'd get to the day when I would say that I've been friends with someone for decades. But you understand something about that kind of relationship, don't you? That it's those consistent deposits over time create the kind of relationship that offers incredible influence in your life. So first, we want them to have this great view of God. Second, we want them to have these relationships with each other. And we want to model for that for them by being in community groups ourselves. The third thing ties to this as well, and I'm just going to give you a quick commercial for this. We're so passionate about you modeling community group life for your kids that we are offering to reimburse you for your babysitting expenses so that you can be a part of a community group. And this is a win-win-win-win. It's a win because community groups don't work well when kids are there. They just don't. We've learned that. Second, it's a win because you're now in a group with other people, your kids are home, being taken care of by someone that you know and trust, and you're involving that person in your family life on a regular basis. It's a win because you now have a babysitter that knows your family and knows your routine and loves your kids. And this means that it's a win because you can now do something called a date. A date is something you maybe haven't done since you got married, but it's a really healthy thing that you can do where you go off with just you and your spouse, and it's fantastic, and you should do it. But my heart breaks when I talk with some of you and you say, well, we can't do community group because we don't have a babysitter. And my heart breaks not because you're not in a community group, but because I'm thinking to myself, when do you go on dates? How do you go on dates if you don't have a babysitter, someone you can trust and leave your kids with? So we are willing to reimburse you for your babysitting expenses because we feel like this is such a big deal. And also, here's the last win on this. It leads you to this other perk, and it's something else that we believe every kid needs. We believe that every kid needs another voice saying the same thing as your parents. And if you're intentional and strategic about your babysitter, you can strike gold on this one. You can end up with a babysitter that is actually helping you be better parents, a babysitter that's helping you turn out kids that love and follow God better than you could have imagined. When we moved to Jacksonville, our youngest was 2, our oldest was 8. We had 4 kids, and we needed a babysitter. This was literally the number one agenda on my to-do list when we moved to Jacksonville. I could remember driving to Jacksonville from Atlanta, being on the phone. We didn't know very many people in Jacksonville, but we were calling everyone we knew, trying to find who would be a suitable babysitter for our family. And we discovered a young woman by the name of Afton. Afton became an absolutely integral part of our family and still is today. She's like our 5th kid. But for about 4 years, Afton was in our home twice a week. And our kids got to know Afton, and our kids got to love Afton, and we got to know Afton, and we got to love her. And Afton loves Jesus. And she became another voice in the life of our kids. So when my kids had questions that perhaps they didn't want to ask mom and dad, or when my kids had questions that perhaps mom and dad were, you know, no longer cool enough to be the source of authority, it was so nice to have Afton there involved in their lives. When my daughter got old enough that she was interested in choosing her own clothes and shopping for her own clothes, when my daughter got to the point where she was very interested in dressing in a way that was cute and fashionable, and mom and dad weren't at all concerned about cute and fashionable, all mom and dad cared about was modest. And we began to come to a place where our influence and our authority and our voice in her life was being slightly diminished as she was establishing independence and making decisions for herself. And that's a natural part of development. I want that for my kids because I want them to move out someday. I want them to develop a sense of independence. I want them to begin to listen to other people. But it's so important who they listen to. And it was so great to have Afton involved in Carly's life at that point, that Afton could be a role model for her of what is cute and fashionable and modest, and have those conversations. It is a win, win, win. So having another voice in your kid's life is so essential. And that's why we put all of our kids into small groups. That's why we start in Wambaland, and all the way through, your kids are in small groups, and we put them with a small group leader because we want that leader to have a consistent, ongoing voice in the life of your kid. You can help with that relationship. You can help by, again, coming as frequently as you can, bringing your kids and bringing them to the same hour every time so that that relationship is furthered. You can also help by investing in that small group leader. Develop a relationship with them. Become their friend on Facebook. Exchange some messages. Invite them over to your house for lunch or for dinner. Get to know the person that is having an influence, a voice in the life of your kid. It is so essential. It's so essential. But sometimes our kids need another voice that's saying the same thing that our parents are saying. The next thing that every one of our kids needs is they need uncommon sense to help them make the wise choice. This is where our teams here work so hard to take complex biblical truth and make it simple and portable for every one of our families. They work so hard at this, to take something that's big and hard to get our hands around and make it simple so that we can take it home and apply it in our homes. I think one of the best environments where this is done is in an environment that we call Kid Stuff Live. This is where kids bring their parents to learn on a Friday night or Saturday night. You see, we know that it's hard for us as parents to stay on top of what our kids are learning. And we want to reinforce it, but it moves pretty fast. And so we've tried to slow things down here. And we teach just one big idea every month. And we camp out on that big idea, and we keep coming back to that big idea, and we make a big deal out of that big idea, and we stay there for a month. Right now, the big idea in Upstreet, which is our Sunday morning environment for kindergarten through fifth grade, is grace. Wiping the slate clean. It's just that simple. And we kicked off that big idea in an environment called Kid Stuff Live on Friday night and Saturday night, and it's so awesome. It's fun, there's music, there's video, there's sketches, and it's this high energy environment where our kids and our parents learn together what grace really is. And then they're so great. I mean, our team's unbelievable. This time they sent us home with little chalkboards. We each had our own little chalkboard, a little box of chalk, and the takeaway was that when you've been hurt, when you've been offended, when someone has wounded you, write that on the chalkboard. Take that to God and say, this really hurts, and write that down. And then grace is being willing to wipe the slate clean. Oh man, such a powerful thing. We had not been home from Kid Stuff Live last Friday night or Saturday night for 30 minutes. And all of a sudden, two of my boys are having a conversation, a very loud conversation. And one of them has hurt the other one. And so right then and there, I had the opportunity to pull them aside and take my son who had been offended and to say, okay, are you ready to write this on the chalkboard? You know, let's talk about it, exactly what was done. How are you hurt? Let's write this on the chalkboard. And then are you ready to wipe the slate clean? And now it's been a week and we don't even need the chalkboard anymore, because that's just become a handle for us to talk about a complex topic. I mean, grace is a really complicated thing to talk about and describe, but now we just talk about our chalkboard. And everybody in our family understands what we mean when we say, what's on your chalkboard? Are you willing to wipe the slate clean? So you can help us. You can leverage these 3,000 hours that you have with your family by bringing your kids to Kid Stuff Live, being a part of that environment, learning alongside your kids, paying attention to these truths, this uncommon sense that comes from the Bible that we work really, really hard to make portable so that you can take it home and it's a simple truth. Pay attention to those parent cards that we send home with your kids or that are available at the check-in desks, because we want you to know what's going on in your kids' life. We want you to know what we're teaching here, and we want you to know how to apply that at home. And finally, the last thing we believe that every kid needs is every kid needs nosy parents. We believe that you need to know where your kids are spiritually. And you can be a part by just being intentional and strategic at certain opportunities in the life of your family. One of the things that we offer is just a prayer on our parent cards that you can do with your kids. And you know, there's something really special about that time of night, and I know it's hard because I'm a parent, and it's usually the most exhausted that I am all day. I get like a second wind after my kids go to bed, but that window of time when I'm putting the kids to bed, that is exhausting. And I know you feel like, I just want them to be in bed and we move on. But there's a window of opportunity there when we're with our kids in their bedroom, it's one-on-one, we have a chance to pray with them, and it's a great chance to go back to these uncommon sense, these simple, portable truths that we've translated. It's a great time to say, oh, grace, yeah, that's the big idea this month. That's so helpful for me. Because I don't always know where to start with my kids. I didn't see it modeled really well. I don't always feel equipped. But I can go back to that big idea and say, oh yeah, it's grace. And then I can ask my kids some questions. What's on your chalkboard? Are you ready to wipe the slate clean? What's your relationship with God feel like right now? What are the kinds of things that you're praying about when you pray all by yourself? Ask your kids questions. Be nosy parents. See, if we do this, I have this hope that if we do this, we can end up with a generation of kids that don't walk away from church when they turn 18. We can have a generation of kids that understand because they see mom and dad modeling it, and because it's been just a real practical part of their small groups all the way along here, that applying their faith is not a Sunday morning thing. It's a really practical, all week long thing. And that these truths that I learn at church, they matter in life all week long. And we can take these 40 hours that we have here and we can multiply them and we can leverage them through the rest of the week. And something amazing can happen in our kids' lives. We have this desire for our kids to realize that church is a place that's integrated with the rest of my life. It's not red over here and yellow over here. It's orange. My life is orange. It's integrated. And that our kids will grow up understanding that these truths make a difference in our lives. And that the church can do its thing, being the light of the world. And the family can do its thing, talking about unconditional love and acceptance. But that we can bring these two together. And that the resulting impact is so much greater than either one on its own. That the resulting impact is that a whole world knows a story of redemption and reconciliation. We want to be a church that resources you as parents. We're not here to put a guilt trip on you and tell you it's all on you. And that's why I am so excited about a church that's willing to think orange. I'm so excited about what our volunteers and our staff are creating week in and week out. And that is why I am so excited about the future of our kids and their opportunity to literally change the world. Because yellow and red, on their own, they're formidable forces. But you put them together, you combine those two influences, and the results can be staggering and world-changing. And I can't wait to see how God's going to use our kids. Let's pray. God, we are so grateful that you love our kids even more than we do. We're so grateful that you have a plan for their lives that exceeds our wildest dreams. That you've designed them and created them with specific talents and gifts and abilities, and you want to do some amazing things through the lives of our kids. We're so fired up about those truths. We're so fired up about that reality. And we're so grateful that you give us the opportunity to influence their lives. But God, we're intimidated by that, and we're sometimes overwhelmed by that. God, I pray for the parents and the grandparents in this room. And I just ask that you would give them wisdom as they lead in their families. I ask that you would give them wisdom as they approach difficult situations with their kids. I ask that you would give them wisdom as they understand what it looks like to love their kids and lead them toward you. And God, I ask that you'd give them boldness, that they'd be bold enough to start conversations with their kids and ask questions of their kids and find out what's really going on in the lives of their kids spiritually. I pray that you would encourage them today. Some of these parents are tired. Some of these parents are overwhelmed. And I pray that they would be encouraged to know that there is a whole team of people here, volunteers and staff, who want to come alongside them and help them be incredible parents. Thank you so much that you love our kids the way that you do. And we want to give them back to you. Amen.